Well, Ellen, it's you and me in the Thursday show once
That's
again.
That's right. That's Tom DiPietro's voice you're hearing. And this is Ellen Thurston.
And we have two guests today. The first
being
Will Yandick.
That's
who's
right.
Who's running for the fightin' 19th. The congressional seat formerly held, well, soon to be vacated by Chris Gibson.
That's right.
And we should both announce that, first of all, we don't support anyone here at the station officially, but both Ellen and I did happen to contribute to this campaign, so we should probably mention that.
We should, and we have.
Thank you so much for that. It's good to be here.
So, obviously, it's going to be a friendly interview.
My work is done here.
So, Will, you're at a point when where you are collecting signatures on petition to get yourself on the ballot. Is that right?
That's right. And that's a process that all candidates have to do. Petition gathering started in March. Our aim is to get over 2,000 petition signatures.
You remember that, Ellen?
Yes, I do.
Well, you know, we've both run for office. Nothing as fancy as Congress, of course, and we didn't have to get 2,000 petition signatures.
We have occupied the offices as well.
That's right, you have.
Excuse me, I lost.
Some of us have. Oh, well, that's
Thanks
right.
Thanks a lot, Ellen, for pointing that out.
But he was appointed to a position in the city.
Of course. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, we're very lucky.
We just want to show you, we're in the big leagues, too.
Yes, we're all in the big leagues in the great game of petition gathering. And we've got some good weather this year. I think you remember years when it's tough to get volunteers to knock on doors and gather petitions in March, which is not always the best time.
I signed one. Did you, Ellen?
I did.
I signed everyone that comes, you know. Hey, I'm a real Democrat, small D Democrat. Anybody wants to run, let them run.
It is merely to put someone's name on the ballot, and it's
doesn't
not.
Obligate
it doesn't
you.
Mean you're obligated. That's
there
right.
There you go.
That's right.
So if someone comes around and asks for a signature, it's always a good
there
thing
you
to
go.
Do. So this is leading up to the primary, and you are going to be on the ballot with Zephyr Teachout?
That's right. There's a June 28th primary just for this congressional race. For those of you who are keen on marking your calendars, we have an April primary for president.
Mm-hmm.
We have a June 28th primary for just for this congressional race, for federal races, and there'll be a state primary possibly in September as well.
Right.
Mm. So it's lots of dates to remember for our civic-minded listeners to go and vote.
So, Will, did it all begin with the fight against the power line for you?
In an effort to run for this congressional seat? No, it all came down to a blog post I read in the end of December, just before Christmas time, where I had learned that the Ulster County executive, Mike Hine, had decided not to run.
Yeah.
And so Mike Hine, for those listeners who don't know who this fellow is, he is the Ulster County executive, the first ever elected as Ulster County moved away from a board of supervisors to a county elected legislature. Everybody from Nancy Pelosi in the House on down thought that this was the gentleman that was going to win this seat. And it was a great surprise among the Democrats of this region when he decided not to run in December, which blew the race wide open for a grassroots candidate like myself.
So when you say grassroots, you're saying that as opposed to Zipper Teachin?
Zipper Teachin?
Yeah.
It's a pretty tough name to forget.
Oh, sorry. I mean, I was close.
Zephyr Teachin.
Oh, thank
Zephyr
you, Ellen.
Zephyr Teachout.
Thank you.
Yes. As she says, the last name is Dutch, and her first name comes from what she calls contrarian parents. Most of us would just call them hippies.
Yeah.
Yes. They'll.
But you're kind of a hippie farmer, right?
Well, I don't know about that, but certainly I'm a progressive Democrat farmer.
There you go. But I think most importantly, you're from here.
I am.
That's one of the real distinguishing factors.
That's right. I was born in Hudson on the hospital on the hill, not too far from here, and went to Hudson High School.
Yeah.
Where I was the valedictorian and grew up on a farm just about 6 miles outside of town here called Green Acres.
Wait a second. Didn't know you're the valedictorian. That changes things.
That changes things.
Negatively.
One of those kids.
Yeah, sorry.
And then a scholarship to Princeton.
That's right. I went right to Princeton after Hudson High School and majored in English and journalism there. Wrote with the New Yorker writer John McPhee, who worked on my senior thesis.
Cool.
And I actually wrote my senior thesis also on another local issue, which was the fight to clean up PCBs in the Hudson River. And won some awards for that thesis.
Wow.
Well, you've done some environmental studies too, haven't you? I mean, that's another...
I have. I have a master's degree in environmental studies from Brown University. And I've worked on issues as diverse as lead in drinking water. We've done studies in the city of Providence, Rhode Island, looking at lead in housing from both old and new stock and across socioeconomic lines, and what can be done to mitigate those impacts, which of course lends itself to our district following the news with Hoosick Falls and the PFOA problems. It's certainly something that I've worked on for a long time. I've also worked on climate change policy with a fellowship at the offices of the Environmental Defense Fund in Boston, specifically a project called Carbon and Communities, which aims to help small and mid-sized communities understand their relative carbon footprints and to find out the best steps to reduce that footprint.
And then you came back to Columbia County to work on the farm. And someone said you came back partly because you could do your work here because the broadband issue had been solved.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've always been circling back to this district all throughout the years of my education. But the real full-time move happened in 2009 when I learned that with high-speed internet, luckily we had decent coverage on our road in Livingston, one of the lucky few. Hmm. For those of you who read the Register Star article a few weeks ago, Columbia and Greene County are just about the bottom of broadband service in the entire state. But that was the clincher for me. I mean, I'd always been drawn to this region. I grew up here. I knew that I wanted to farm here and raise a family here. But internet access is the thing that allowed me to continue my work in consulting and journalism. And it's so important for this congressional race because this is the utility challenge of the 21st century. There are businesses that are literally moving out of our district because they do not have good cellular and broadband coverage.
I know.
And in terms of developing new business here, it's a drawback. It's impossible to bring a real tech business into town if you don't have broadband.
Right.
Businesses and real estate. I talk to real estate agents all the time on this campaign trail who say, one of the questions people ask me before I can sign a deal on a house is, what is the internet like? They'll pull a cell phone out of their pocket, and if they see one bar and no service, it's, see ya, I'm not buying this house.
So we keep seeing all these efforts in the news locally about broadband. Everybody seems to be worried about broadband, but why is it taking so long?
It's an enormous problem, and there is no magic bullet to fix this problem. The first problem is regulatory. It's not clear from a state regulatory perspective whose role it is to maintain infrastructure once it gets built. This is a huge barrier for companies and providers to lay the line, the fiber and the cable, until it's settled whose responsibility is to maintain those lines. It's one of technology, right? I mean, we live in a very diffusely settled housing market, housing pattern, and it's just tough to lay all that fiber and cable to each of those remote farmhouses and villages.
Does it also mean replacing all the existing internet cable that's out there?
I think that we don't have to replace it. Remember, there's multiple technologies, and that gets to the third part of this, which is that there are more than one way, there's more than one single way to provide quality broadband access to folks, and cable and fiber is one way. But there are also other exciting technologies called advanced microwave projection, which is getting much better at projecting a signal through things like foliage and leaves, which they were not very good at doing that a generation ago. This is how Latin America and places like India are investing in their broadband. But both of those technologies, whether it's through a advanced microwave projection or through traditional lines, are going to require investment at the federal level.
Yeah, Ellen worries about microwave projections.
Yeah, I do. Anyway, let me ask, you are traveling probably throughout this district, which is enormous.
It is. It's the size of a small European country. It's 11 counties. It stretches all the way to Cooperstown in Otsego County, Rensselaer around the city of Troy, most of Dutchess County, and includes Ulster and Sullivan all the way down to the Pennsylvania border and everything in between.
Wow.
But I understand only one town in Broome County.
One single gerrymandered town, Sanford, in Broome County.
That's where I grew up, and I disown it now because they want to leave New York State, part of Broome County wants to, and join Pennsylvania because of
they
the fracking,
fracking
issue. They want to be able to frack.
Yeah.
So.
We'll frack them.
Goodbye. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
so it's a huge district. I mean, in terms of area, in terms of people, it's how many people is it?
We aim in this country to have our 435 congressional districts cover roughly 700,000 people per district. That, I mean, it fluctuates by by a bit. That's the purpose of our every 10-year census is to figure that out. And, of course, those congressional districts get reapportioned every 10 years. And it already looks like New York State is going to shed yet another congressional district after the 2020 census, which may affect this congressional district and make it even larger.
Make it larger. The district changed before the last election, didn't it, as I recall?
Right. So the 2010
census. Somebody was
going to
run here and then didn't.
Right. Two terms ago, this district got merged with Maurice Hinchey's old district west of the river. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who remember Chris Gibson's old district, it included much more of the North Country, kind of bracketed around the city of Hudson or the city of Albany into Warren County and the foothills of the Adirondack Mountains. I will say, as gerrymandered and large as this district is, it makes more political and cultural and geographic sense the way it's drawn right now. For example, the entire Catskill Park, for the first time, is in one single congressional district, as well as the Mid-Hudson Valley. And it forms a kind of exurban core around New York City. One of the defining characteristics of this congressional district right now is to try to understand how to capture the market opportunities of New York City while still maintaining our rural and working landscapes. I think that is an issue in every single one of the 11 counties of this district. There are a few urban spots like Kingston, but those are the exception rather than the rule. It's largely a rural district of small villages, much like Columbia County.
And are you trying to get endorsements from the committees, the Democratic committees, in all of those far-off places?
That is a process that's unfolding right now. So we're very proud to have won the Green County endorsement just last night. That was our second endorsement, so we've won Columbia and Green. And several other counties are actually postponing their endorsements, which is a real nod to our campaign because they're saying, we're not ready to put the crown on Zephyr Teachout yet. We want to hear more from Will Yandick. And so Delaware County last night just postponed their endorsement to give us a chance to tell our story and get to meet the voters out there. Sullivan County also delayed its endorsement. And Ulster County, where there's a third of the vote, the delegate votes were split almost 50-50 between Zephyr Teachout and myself, which is a great, strong showing for this campaign because we haven't done our direct mail or any television yet. Zephyr enjoys some name recognition from her gubernatorial run, and we're already competitive with her, and the race is just beginning.
Yes, I think I read that you had 46% of the vote. That's
right.
Incredible.
So with a weighted vote, that could have meant that we lost by maybe only one or two individual people, which is very, very strong in a county that any Democrat or Republican, for that matter, needs to do well in this congressional district. A third of the vote of New York 19 is in Ulster County.
Oh.
It's that well-populated. Hmm?
It's the only area with any significant population centers. So Woodstock and Saugerties
Kingston
Metro, yeah.
New Paltz.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So. Columbia County is growing as a share of Democrats, so it's an important player in the primary. We're expecting about 10 to 12% of the vote from Columbia County, which has doubled in the last 4 to 8 years as more and more Democrats are registering to vote here.
Maybe it's some of those people that are coming from Brooklyn.
Well, we welcome everybody if they roll up their sleeves and work hard to make upstate New York a place we can be proud of.
Right.
We've certainly benefited from lots of young people from Brooklyn who want to farm here. There's an exciting farming movement here. I mean, when I grew up in the 80s, everybody in my community said, get the heck out of farming. And now it's profitable again. My farm is profitable. Those individuals are finding new ways to market their farm products, either to restaurants or farm-to-table operations, CSAs, innovative programs to bring them to human resource departments. I've just toured an operation across the river in Athens called Field Goods, where they'll take a bag of produce to everyone's place of work once a week for a small subscription fee, which is a win-win for the farmers and for folks to get healthy fruits and vegetables.
Great.
Yeah, good things are happening here.
So when you make it to Congress, you're not only going to be responsible for bringing back things to your district. What are your views on some of the national issues that you'll have to vote on?
Yeah, sure. So this is the interesting thing and what's so fascinating about being a congressperson, especially today in the era of big gridlock. You have to be a congressperson that's interested in constituency services because so few Democratic bills are getting out of committees right now that the Democrats aren't in the majority. But I'm a center-left progressive on many of the issues that this district cares about. making sure that we have a strong military, but one that's focused on a new threat from cyber terrorism. So we spend more on our military budget than most of the other industrialized nations combined. And we need to start redirecting those funds towards the enemy that's changing. I think we are just as likely to suffer from someone that harms the Americans through a click of the mouse or by interfering with our water or electricity transmission systems as traditional wars with foreign nation states. Obviously, I support investing more in clean energy, not only because it's good for the planet, but because it puts dollars back in people's pockets. And I would support ending the $35.5 billion that we spend on oil and gas subsidies every year in this country for corporations that don't need them. Campaign finance reform. I don't believe that we can persist as a democracy with Citizens United. I don't believe that our founding fathers ever envisioned a corporation to have First Amendment rights as an individual does. And of course, fighting for living wages for our workers and trade deals that offer more than 10% growth for China and 10% unemployment for us. So those are the things that excite me to work on in Washington, and there are, of course, many other issues.
So who's this skateboard guy you brought with you?
Oh, well, we've got Zach here. We've got one of the things.
Got the shades. It's chewing gum.
Well, he's on radio. So
he's
didn't
for
put
the youth demographic?
I know. That's the thing about radio. You come in here looking a little shabby. That's Zach, who's part of our three-person finance team. This race is probably going to cost between $3 and $4 million.
Wow.
So an awful lot of what we do in terms of going on great programs like this and working around the district
free
is trying to find find the resources to compete.
How far are you along that?
We're doing a great job so far. We're doing a great job. Most of the money that we've raised in district, the $200,000 we've raised in district, comes from largely small contributions. And we've hired a firm in New York City to help expand that network. My Princeton and Brown alums have been very loyal, generous donors, environmentalists and progressives who are interested in sending someone to the next Congress who's right on environmental issues have been very generous.
What about the senior vote?
The senior vote is hugely important in this district. Yeah. It's something I actually talk about all the time on the campaign. In 2000 in this district, 1 in 4 people were over the age of 55. By 2020, it will be 1 in 3. We're one of the most rapidly aging congressional districts in the country.
I know.
We're 10 years older than the national median age, and they're enormously important as voters. Those who are older tend to have attended civics classes in high school, and they get out and vote to their credit. We expect 70% of the
Ellen votes as many times as she can.
As many times and as often as she can. And so that's a big part of why I'm running, actually. I've been a reporter for AARP. For the AARP Bulletin since 2004.
Once a month, that newsletter comes.
That newsletter that slaps into your mailbox, and if you're 55 or 60, it's the harbinger of doom. And maybe if you're a little older, you maybe appreciate the resources, and it's a great publication. And I've covered the news reporting beat for something called the State Page for the Northeastern and Midwestern states since 2004, which is really great for somebody interested in politics. Because every month I'm calling state houses and state offices to find out the latest developments on senior issues. And
so when do you do this? Right after milking the cows in the morning?
Yes. We're a fruit and vegetable farm, so we do get a break, thank goodness. We're busy, it's that story of broadband.
That's a great combination, Ellen, farming and writing.
Farming and writing.
Right.
I'm not the only person in this district to do that, but it's a great combination.
Yeah.
I know what I wanted to ask you. I have a quote here. Jobs that can't be outsourced is something that you are interested in.
That's right.
What do you mean by jobs that can't be outsourced?
So we were just talking about this at the Greene County endorsement the other night. And I mean, we've gone through this issue here in our native city of Hudson with the St. Lawrence fight and a debate about where the jobs of the future are going to come. You know, we all know what built Hudson. It was an industrial small city. There were many good paying jobs. Friends of mine who remember growing up here in the 50s say, heck, if you were laid off from one job, you walked up the street and you got signed up in the next factory. And those good paying jobs, the kinds of jobs you could get at 20 and work for a company where they took care of you and you could retire at 62 with a defined pension, are getting harder and harder to find. It's not just trade deals. There have been structural shifts in employment in this country that are going to be very difficult for us to correct. So my position is that we have to build on the strengths that we have in this community. And the kinds of jobs that can't be outsourced are those that are in the tourism business. That is a growing, growing economic sector in all 11 counties in this congressional district. And it's diversifying, right? People used to complain in this city 20 years ago that, you go to Hudson, all they got is antiques there. Well, look at what we have now. It's diversifying.
Antiques?
We have antiques plus. Antiques plus. It's diversified. And this is the story of my own farm. People that get off the Taconic Parkway, to get off the Hudson Anchorage exit to come to Hudson and to see the Catskills, stop at my farm and shop there. And it's a tide that has been lifting all boats. It's not just farm and food and antiques, though. It's wedding destinations and wineries and breweries and people that come to places like Olana now from not just New York City, but all over. And I was at Olana this winter, and there was a couple there from Denmark, another there from Turkey. There are people that want to come to this district because of its historic core and the way it looks like. We've got to build on that. Jobs that can't be outsourced are also in the food movement. We still live a few hours north of the largest domestic food market in the country, and only a tiny fraction of the fruits and vegetables that New York City residents consume are grown in this district. We have the land here, we have the water here, and we need somebody in our next House of Representatives who will reauthorize the Farm Bill to look for opportunities to market and distribute more products to New York City, because those jobs are there that can't be outsourced. The clean energy movement that I referenced are jobs that can't be outsourced. The service, sale, and maintenance of solar panels. It's happening. I see it right in my own hometown. There are folks moving door to door in the town of Livingston and signing people up on solar contracts, not out of ideological kind of, you know, do-gooder hippie arguments that were the selling points of the 1980s, mm-hmm. but now across people from all ideological backgrounds, because they just want to put dollars back in their own pockets. There are bright spots that we can build on.
Well, you know, this city was founded by entrepreneurs. In fact, Henry Hudson was one of the first entrepreneurs. He had to go. He was part of the freelance economy. He went and found a job in another country. Worked for them for a while. The Dutch East...
The Dutch East India Company. East India Company.
Found a job with them. Discovered the Hudson.
Put me on the spot.
Went
like
back.
That's not bad. Not a bad resume.
Yeah.
Not bad at all. And now we have the highest percentage of entrepreneurs or self-employed people in the whole state, and way high up on the scale in the United States. Mm-hmm. So we know about entrepreneurship here.
We sure do.
What about some of the other counties? I mean, what are, in terms of jobs, are they looking at the same kind of potential for tourism, for farming?
Absolutely. That's one of the great heartening things that's happened as I've traveled through this district, is to see that the issues that resonate with me and my residents as a councilman in Livingston, as a resident of Columbia County, also resonate with the rest of the district. Cooperstown is a huge tourism draw in Otsego County. Have a very large brewery movement out there. You know, there are folks that are working tirelessly to try to revamp the old borscht belt of Sullivan County, which was a big conference center and hotel.
Ellen's
nexus.
More interested in the wineries. Where are they? Which county has them?
There are lots of wineries, but we have some
right here in Columbia County.
Dutchess, Columbia, and Ulster County have lots of great wineries, and they're booming. And the numbers of those wineries are growing, in fact, now that state policy has made it much easier for farm-grown wineries and breweries to market their products right on site.
Yeah, and Cuomo came up with a special license that, in fact, our own Hudson Brewery has, which allows them to sell any product that's New York State produced, including hard alcohol. No, hard alcohol too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a new distilleries. Brewery
here. We have distilleries
right across from the Amtrak station.
That's right.
Is their tasting room?
That's right.
So we're pretty excited.
But it's good
excited.
To encourage local products on that with government backing.
It is
not so much by. Giving tax breaks and that kind of thing, but actually making it easier for them to do it. That's more important than just, throwing money at things.
That's right, and there's a federal role for that as well. I was talking to a gentleman from Halcott the other day who has tirelessly, he's into breeding goats and has created a breed of goat that's perfectly fitted for our climate. And he was explaining to me, most of the meat goats are bred for the large farms of the Midwest and Southwestern states. And our grass here is dry for only 2 hours of the day. So these goats that are bred for drier climates, if they're raised here in the mid-Hudson Valley, eat this wet grass and have all these health problems. So he's developed this goat that is a dual purpose. It's great meat, but also makes a good cheese. But the nightmare of regulations that he's had to work through to be able to make artisanal cheeses on his own farms, he's got to put in four different sinks and build a separate room where you wash your boots versus where you wash your pans. And, you know, there is a regulatory environment. I mean, we as Democrats believe that we can't just let the free market reign because the strong will prey upon the weak and roll over environmental regulations if there wasn't somebody to keep an eye on them. But I think in some cases, we do have to ask ourselves as lawmakers to say, are we impeding good entrepreneurial activity? And is this really in the best interest of the
public? And at the same time, facilitating industrial agriculture, which is a disaster.
That's right, because industrial companies are the only ones with the large economy of scales that can deal with this myriad of regulations. It's often the small entrepreneur, the small business owner that creates
or can
most
pay
of
the fines and just
right.
ignore the regulations.
That's right. That's right. So we have to be cognizant of those, making sure that the regulations that we try to do to employ good health safety laws don't impede that small business development.
Do you know about the goat study here in Columbia County?
They are. You know, we could be the new Saudi Arabia of goats someday. I mean, Urial, which is a French company, has moved to the town of Livingston, largely because they're interested in entering markets of New York City, which is one of the largest consumers of goat cheese in North America.
Really?
It is.
And they're looking for the right breed of goat to, and then they're going to encourage
cool.
goat farming for both meat and milk.
Yeah, and this is just an example of one of the many niche farming products that can make a go here in this mm-hmm. district. And it's always been this way. When you look at the history of farming of Columbia County and this mid-Hudson Valley, we aren't a region like the prairies of Wisconsin or Minnesota that's grown a type of wheat since the first plows broke the sod. This is an area in which those freelance entrepreneurs that Ellen referenced have always been trying new agricultural products and ideas. It's a real laboratory for new agricultural ideas.
What about the hops industry? It used to be that there were lots of hops grown here, and then suddenly something happened to the crop, and it all went away. And now there are all these breweries. Are they getting their hops here, or are they having to look elsewhere?
This is big business, particularly in the western part of this district. Otsego and Delaware counties have some really good leaders on hop development and production. And again, like your goat example, we lived through the 19th century where every little region of this country had its own breed of agricultural products, whether it's goats or hops or strawberries or apples. And then during the 20th century, we kind of standardized all that and lost all of those genetics. And you can pick almost any agricultural sector, and there are individuals working to get those genetics back. Hops are very susceptible to a kind of mildew that can ruin them very quickly in wet weather. So there are individuals that are working on developing new strains of hops here in this district that can withstand that and are succeeding. And the demand for hops is growing. It's a very high-value specialty crop. And there are more acres planted to hops in this district every season.
Great. Good to hear.
Yep.
Let's talk about politics for a minute. You were elected as a Democrat in the town of Livingston in a sea of Republicans, as I understand it.
That's right.
And so you have good experience in crossing the aisle, as
I
keep saying. And you are the deputy?
The deputy supervisor.
Supervisor.
Right, that's an appointed position.
And I'm, it is.
I'm the first deputy supervisor who is a Democrat ever in the town.
Wow.
I think I'm only the third or fourth Democrat ever elected, although we haven't gone back to the handwritten notes. But we stopped somewhere at the Whigs around the 1830s and figured out that's probably it. And that's something that I'll use in this election and something that I'll take to the House of Representatives. One of the things that I've always argued is gives me a leg up over my immediate Democratic opponent is that I do have this track record of winning over moderates and Republicans and still getting progressive wins, like banning hydrofracking and supporting clean energy and our historic resources. But it is essential in this district that an individual can win those moderate votes. You cannot win this district by energizing progressives alone. When I get to the House of Representatives, I'll still fight for those progressive causes, but you've got to go play offense and be a Democrat that can win where those moderate votes are, and they're in the veterans halls and church suppers and sports confederations and farm bureau meetings. And this, these are the people I have grown up with my entire life who are rooting for me, and I think will give me a strong leg up in the general.
You know, I think Chris Gibson even managed to do that in a way. He was not, you know, a hardcore intransigent Republican in many on many issues, and that was part of his strength, you know, getting reelected.
So, Will, what are we leaving out? What are we forgetting here?
Well, again, if there are folks that are interested in carrying petitions, can I say that? Can I make a plug for petitions online? We have a website, which is Will, very easy to remember. It's Will, W-I-L-L, for the number 4, congress.com. And folks can go periodically to this site and learn about meet and greet opportunities for us, which we try to plan in the district each week and have events all throughout this district each week. You can contribute if you're so inclined there and can learn more about my issues, get in touch with me, and get in touch with my campaign there, Will for Congress.
So are you on the road constantly now?
Constantly. This is
every day?
Every single day. Every single day. I will have Easter off where I can file my taxes and catch up on my, my errands. But it's every single day. We are a full-time candidate traveling on the phone or traveling this district every single day.
But meeting all, meeting the people is really a lot of fun, too.
It's an enormous amount of fun. I learn something every day on this path. And
that's what I was really going to say. I learned a lot, just especially places I didn't normally walk and talk to people. It was amazing. It was a great experience. I can't imagine what it must be like when you have a this large a scenario to work with.
It's really inspiring. And as much as we talk about the negative parts of politics, the bitterness, the influx of corporate money, how difficult it is to run for Congress, raising that amount of money, this messy democracy that we have still works. People care. We come from a culture in this country where people still do care. I know we give statistics all the time about how few people come to the polls, but if you knock on a door and you talk to somebody, tell me your story, tell me what you care about, you always get an answer. People love to engage about the issues that they care about. We're still Alexis de Tocqueville's messy democracy in this country, even here in the 21st century, and it's been an honor to go around and meet folks.
Well, I think what we're seeing now on television, the leading up to the primary, is has turned a lot of people on, either on to politics or off politics. I don't know who's winning out in that regard, but I hope that more people will be interested on the national level. I think it's easier locally than running for national office, I would think. But
well, Congress is the first place that the local meets up with the national, really, on our in our political system. That's what makes it so exciting. That, you know, there is somebody local who's going to then represent us on the bigger scale. Granted, it's, you know, there's a ton of congressmen, and it's hard to get a voice there, especially when you're new and, you know, feeling your way around there. And there's a lot of weirdos down there. You know, these people have been in
they're
office forever.
Over.
And they all run against it when they're running, you know, they're running. And then when they're in there, they're just complete insiders.
Yeah,
it's
everybody
amazing.
Everybody hates Congress, but love their individual congressperson, they say.
Yeah, right. Especially like the benefits of being in office.
Well, good.
Well, we've been talking to Will Yandick, who is running for Congress, is running for the Democratic seat, I mean, sorry, the Democratic nomination for the 19th District, the Fighting 19th, here in 11 counties of upstate New York. 11 counties it encompasses, Ellen.
I know.
I had no idea it was that big.
It's amazing. It's a beautiful part of the state, though. It's really wonderful.
It sure is. We've dodged some bullets here. You know, urban renewal in the 60s, which tore off an awful lot of historic cores from cities, didn't hit us as hard as other parts of the country. You know, we've got some patches.
Have you been to Amsterdam?
I have, yes.
Someone today just told me, if you want to see what urban renewal, when it didn't work, go to Amsterdam. Apparently they tore out the center of that city. Yeah. I haven't been there, but.
Yeah, no, we still comparing, have our historic towns and villages largely intact. We have working family farms still over multiple generations here, and an awful lot of cultural and natural resources. We're very lucky.
Right. Well, thanks for coming in, Will.
Thanks so much, guys. This is great. love to be back when you have an opportunity for me to come back, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Great.
Thanks.